Hello, 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 drama listener. Whether it's your first episode or your 200th, I'm so happy you are here listening to this one today. It's an honestly iconic day because Andy Mientis joins the Double Drama Club. That's right. He becomes one of a handful of guests to return to the pod for a second episode, and we're so happy he's here to do it. Before we get into that, I need to tell you about Drama Plus. So, Drama Plus is our bonus content platform where for $5 a month, you get added to our Instagram close friends and you get extra episodes of the pod where Dylan and I chit chat with each other about all things theater, pop culture, love, and life. Again, Andy Mientis is here. It has been almost 4 years since his last appearance on the pod. So, we've got a lot of catching up to do. We thank you so much for listening again. Definitely go over to patreon.com/thedramapodcast, become a member of Drama Plus, and tell all your friends about us. We love you so much. Get ready for this amazing episode. All right, on to the show.
Press play.
Curtain up, and now we're in.
It's time to take a spin.
With shade and tea
to spill.
Ooh, drama.
Oh, that's a tweet. Did they book? Who got nom?
They option no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today?
Oh, that's a gag, honey.
Say no more.
Drama.
Drama.
Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life.
I am Connor McDowell.
And I am Dylan McDowell.
Dylan, I'm so excited today.
We are together, which is always an exciting, it always brings a better energy to the podcast.
I wish we still did this in person.
Yeah.
Every interview.
Mm-hmm.
One day.
One day. It's an exciting day for multiple reasons. We have a returning guest. I think this is only the fourth.
Well,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is, it's an elusive club.
Oh, yeah. It's
kind of like SNL, like five timers.
But, it is. Mm-hmm. And of course, three of the four Spring Awakening.
Yeah.
You know,
we would have it no other way. No other way.
But you're right. Okay. So we have a return guest who we're obsessed with.
Mm-hmm.
We have new Gaga.
We do. And that's, I think, the other reason why today is huge.
Are you loving
yeah.
Mayhem? I mean, I know it's only been out for 12 hours.
Yeah. And like within like the amount of time that we've both been awake and able to listen separately while in the same smallish apartment has been tough, but I'm loving it.
I normally have a ritual for like when an album drops, which is like I wake up in the morning, kind of like get my bearings, and then I just like put on my headphones and I listen to it while I'm like brushing my teeth, putting my contacts, making my coffee, walking in the gym, at the gym, you know. So
Yeah.
I didn't have that today to really like just focus on the music, but I, of course, love it.
Yeah, I mean,
I love that woman.
She's the best. And I was reading an article today. It's almost been 5 years since her last album, which is chilling because it was Chromatica and it was during the pandemic, like
Oh,
early
shoot.
pandemic.
Yeah, I loved Chromatica.
I know.
Loved
Got us
it.
through some tough times.
It did. Well, I mean, the Chromatica era kind of lasted a long time. Plus, she did a bunch of movies in between, I guess. But Chromatica Ball came like a year later, and then she just released it on HBO last summer. So it's.
And who could forget the Joker era with that? That what was that album called?
Most people have forgotten.
Sure.
Harlequin.
Harlequin. Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually liked it, but.
She's such an amazing vocalist. Like hearing her sing those songs was great. But Mayhem is so good. I feel like I don't have like a full take on the album in general yet, but as everyone is saying, it's way funkier than I
It's definitely
expected.
funky. I love Garden of Eden. I think that's like my favorite one
So
so
good.
far.
So
And Zombie
good.
Boy. Those stand out. But again, I've only given it one spin.
Yeah.
So
Yeah. No, it's great. I'll have more thoughts to come. But okay, so we've got a return guest. We're together. We have Mayhem. What more could be better?
I know. I know. Let's bring in this guest. I mean, it's already been fun, but we were discussing the last time we chatted, it was Pride 2021.
Yeah.
So just after it'd been a year of lockdown, and I think things had sort of.
I think we had our vaccines.
I want to say we were double vaxxed, in
Oh,
fact.
period. Period. Okay. I know, but I'm so excited. I'm gonna read a little intro to remind our listeners of who he is. But y'all, our guest today is back for more drama. In case you need a brief reminder, this incredible actor, singer, writer, and composer is currently starring in the Jonathan Larson Project at the Orpheum Theater. He's synonymous with elevating queer work and stories on stage, screen, and the written page. You'll recognize his iconography, including Broadway appearances in Les Mis, Deaf West Spring Awakening, and the national tours of Spring Awakening and Wicked, as well as in Tommy, Bent, Ragtime, Carrie and MCC, The View Upstairs at London Soho Theatre, and recently, Jim Henson's musical Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas. Television credits include the series Grendel and Dolly Parton's Heartstrings for Netflix, The Pied Piper and CW's The Flash, Gone, and of course, smash as Kyle Bishop. He wrote the book and lyrics to the musical Burn All Night at ART, the middle grade fiction series The Backstagers, and recently his debut YA novel Fraternity. Gagged, he's been distinguished on Out Magazine's list of the 100 most compelling LGBT people of the year, a title he's held in McDowell Twins' homes and minds for over a decade. We're so thrilled to have this diva join the Double Drama Club. Please welcome to Drama,
Andy
Andy
Mientos.
Mientos.
Oh my goodness. An intro like that. I could listen to you talk about me all day. No, that was really sweet. That was really very nice. And thank you for taking time away from mayhem today to speak with me. I know it's a big ask, so I appreciate it.
We do observe national holidays like this, but have you gotten a chance to listen yet?
I've given a couple of spins and I need more time like with all art, I want to like sit and process. And I really need this one. Like, I feel like I need this one both right before I go out and then like during the pregame before we're leaving the apartment while we're still like getting cute, having that shot. I think it's going to really nail there. I want to hear like abracadabra, like in the room, in the red light. And then I want it on when we're winding down too. So like I feel like I can't properly assess it in the daylight hours, but I do really love How Bad Do You Want Me? That's my number one so
Oh,
far.
it's so good.
It's vibey, it's 80s.
There's early rumors that there's some Taylor Swift influence in it, potentially even some background vocals.
I feel that for sure. I think
Yeah,
that influence is
wow.
there. Yeah.
I know.
Oh
Well,
my
we'll
gosh.
see. You can't in the daylight is incredible. You said you can't properly process it during the daylight hours. That's so funny.
Like most things with me, it's not
Yeah.
meant for daytime. Not
That is
suitable for
fair.
daytime. Yeah.
Andy, we're so happy to have you back. I mean, we all re-listened to our first episode we did together from summer 2021, but
Wild.
yeah. Any takeaways, Andy?
Several, several. So first of all, I was really gagged by me trying to describe maybe Happy Ending to You many years before it would like be a Broadway hit. And I'm so
Yeah.
it like really chuffed me to be like, man, we did that and it actually happened. And then you could go see it right now. Like, whoa. That we talked about the potential of another Gypsy revival, should an actor worthy
Yes.
of it come along, and here we are. God, so many things.
You teased Fraternity.
Teased Fraternity, which now available where all books are sold and on audiobook.
Period. And where they can be listened to, right?
Yes, exactly right. Yeah, God, just like it's so many things. I was like, oh, we talk about Rent and Larson a great deal, which is really cool. Yeah, it just feels like I say in the episode, like sometimes I'm talking about Larson when I talk about like sometimes things happen and you're able to kind of zoom out in your life and be like, there is a plan, there is a track, like this is going well. And listening to that made me realize that too, because I'm talking about like how much I miss doing a run of a show. I'd been like only doing like television and writing and like creative team work at that. I hadn't been on stage in a while at that point. And now I'm back and doing, this show in New York and I'm so happy. So yeah, it was one of those moments of being like, damn, like a lot of the things, like a lot of the irons in the fire at that time are now like ready for consumption and it feels really good.
Oh, I love it. I know. I clocked so many of those things as well. Wait, I have to say, in your Instagram post, when you were talking about like returning to the stage for the Jonathan Larson project, you were like, I've been away for a little while living some other lives. And it was a gag of a caption. It was, you can write a good caption,
Hey,
Andy.
thank you. I am a writer sometimes, but yes, thank you. I feel like I like to use Instagram as little as possible. And I like to use it to, number one, post like maybe a little bit too cheeky mood boards that I do frequently. And then I like to use it to eventize like moments. Like I like to sort of like just be like, hey, this thing's happening, or this person I'm proud of is doing something cool, or and just kind of like I don't journal in my life. I don't like diary or anything like that. So I do tend to go on in the captions, but it was a big deal. It was really, I didn't realize how much I had missed it until I was, faced with it again. And I was like, God damn, this is, I feel myself returning to myself in doing this.
Oh,
Yeah.
that's powerful. I love to hear that. Yeah, I'm curious, Andy, are you well?
I'm so well. I'm the wellest I've been in a while, for sure. I was actually struck in listening back to that old episode, how well I seem and how well like I said I was, which I'm sure was true to some degree at the time, but like when you think about how it was the pandemic, I couldn't conceive of like a return to the New York stage. I like luckily was able to work a little bit between like then and now, but I think I had gotten a big job shortly after recording that, but at the time had just like absolutely nothing on the horizon other than like making it to the next day of like the pandemic. And so it was a really good reminder in like, yeah, to be grateful for like the things that have come along and have worked out.
And so, yeah, like everything's frankly awesome right now. I'm like doing this show that I love with people I love. You know, Michael's got maybe Happy Ending on Broadway that is like killing it, and I'm so proud of. And it's just like a rare time when like kind of everything's going great. The sun is out today. It's like starting to like flirt with maybe spring. Spring's like doing a walkthrough. You know, she's not here yet, but she's
Right.
like doing a site visit, and she's like, Yeah, I'm feeling very optimistic today.
Oh, I love it. I can see it in your smile. And also, you've got your cute dog Hudson
Yes,
sitting with
for
you.
anyone watching at home, he's not looking here now, but
Oh.
he's here with me.
How long have you had Hudson?
Since April of 2020, it was like, so
Oh, wow.
Michael and I had a cat that was my stepcat, my beloved stepcat Eloise from Michael's previous relationship. He kept the cat and I inherited her and became like, she became my pet more than anyone else's, I would say. And I loved her so, so much. And she very sadly passed in the fall of 2019. And I missed having an animal. We had talked about getting a dog. I'd never had a dog in my life. I was always a cat person growing up. And it just with like schedules, it was like, when are we going to raise a puppy? Like, it's going to like one of us more than the other because someone's going to be off doing something crazy. And then once it became like very clear what was happening, but like we went upstate in March when everyone like took that like 2 weeks off Broadway or whatever, and like I was doing a workshop that got shut down, and I was like, okay, like see you when, you know, see you in a couple weeks. And we went up there, and I remember being in the car on the way up and saying like, okay, we really need like a hobby or like a project for these next 2 weeks so we don't go crazy. Let's like clean out the basement. Let's like, and then when this 2 weeks is done, we'll have cleaned out the basement. Cut to, we didn't leave that house for a year and a half. And yeah, so like when April rolled around, we were like, let's get the goddamn dog. And we went on Pet
Yes.
Finder and we found this dog. He was presented as a dachshund mix that was meant to be under like we really wanted, because we kind of needed a dog that could like fit under a seat in a plane so that we could like travel him anywhere. And then we showed up and he looked really big as a puppy in person. And this was peak pandemic, so we like got him like, we met this family that was fostering him in this Target parking lot in like West New York, and they kind of like sent him across. It was like the Caucasian Chalk Circle or something. They just kind of like sent him over, and we were like, okay, like we're doing that. Like, you know, normally you get to visit and kind of see if it's working out. This was like, we're taking it. This is happening. And we were like, is he a dachshund? They're like, oh no, we think he's a German Shepherd. And we're like, oh, okay, bye. And then like he was growing so fast, we like plugged his numbers into this algorithm that is supposed to tell you like how big he's going to get, and it said 50 pounds, and we're like, okay, we have a
Oof.
full-size dog. And then he stopped growing at like 30 pounds, and he's a great little, he looks like a German Shepherd puppy, and he's perfect, and it all worked out great.
He
Yeah,
does. He does look like a German Shepherd. He's so cute. That's such a great breed to have, just in general. So loyal and
they're so
protective
sweet,
and so smart.
very smart though, too smart. Like he's
Yeah.
like, you can't get anything past him. Yeah.
Oh, wait. Okay. So going back to when Broadway shut down and you were in a workshop, can you say what that workshop was?
Yeah, I can, because it's really sadly fell apart, and now I feel like I'm in a space where I just can and should talk about it. It was a revival, a revised revival of Radiant Baby.
I'm not familiar.
Radiant Baby is this bio musical about Keith Haring, famous artist, queer icon, that played the Public Theater in 2003, I want to say, starring Dan Reichard and Billy Porter and Lena Hall and like all these cool folks. Way back when, that, you know, the notices of it were like that it was really promising, and it just like hit New York, you know, and maybe like could have used another, you know, who knows, but like it got like encouraging, if not like fully enthusiastic reviews, and then just kind of went away. It didn't get a cast album, like, and so I was playing Keith in this revival that was shut down. Like, I remember we were, once they had shut down the Broadway shows, we still were coming to rehearsal because they're like, well, we're not a show. And there was like, I remember walking in me like, can we hush, should we like elbows? That was when we were all like washing our hands for like a certain amount of time, right? Like we thought that would do it. And they were like, okay guys, we've made the decision, like we're gonna do the presentation on Monday, but we're just only gonna invite like in-house people, because there was a theater that was like producing it. It was like gonna happen. It wasn't like we were like trying to impress anybody. It was like just to like work on the new draft of the show. And that didn't happen. We then like got a call the next morning. They're like, don't come. It's all, and that's when we fled upstate and got the dog. And then I was actually really happily surprised to see that it came back after the pandemic. We did another big workshop of it, which we actually got to do, and it was awesome. And then it was like on track to happen. And then, from what I understand, they ran into some issues with the estate that I don't know how much of this I should be saying, but I mean, whatever, who
Sure.
cares? It's basically like they had approved, like the Keith Haring people had like approved what the show was in like 2003 when they put it up, and they're like, no, that's the show, you can't change it. And they were like, well, and thus it's done,
Oh,
which was a shame because
damn.
I am
That's sad.
obsessed with him, and I was really obsessed with the show, and the music is awesome, and it just would have been really awesome. But like so
Yeah.
many things, it just was a false alarm, you know.
I know. I wish if anything you guys could have like laid down some of the songs because I feel like that's the life of a show these days.
Yeah.
Otherwise it's so hard. Gosh, I love Keith Haring. I'm desperate to get a Keith tattoo at some point.
Yeah.
Wait,
Yeah.
remember that one moment we were like at the it was summer 2021, the Hot Facts summer. We were like at the club and I think you had a Keith Haring shirt on.
Yes, we were
And
dancing.
so dancing and some girl runs up to Dylan and she just goes, "Come on, Keith."
Great. That's
It was a
community.
nice moment.
That's
It was
community.
community. It was a good one. Yeah. Anytime he wears that shirt, I always go, "Come on, Keith."
Would you guys ever get like the same tattoo, or is that, do you avoid like the matchy-matchiness?
We avoid
I
matchy-matchy.
would.
I would get
I can
something
see
like
you wear different facial
similarly.
hair or lack
Yeah.
thereof. Like you're
Yeah.
not kind of
Yeah.
leaning in. Yeah.
If it was connected in a way, like some referential thing, maybe, but I don't know. I have a few tattoos. Connor doesn't have any. Do you have any
Oh.
tattoos?
I do. I have two. I have a ghost light over here.
Oh, cool.
And then I have an interactive, like interlocking tattoo with someone on my shoulder. Me and Katherine Gallagher have matching tattoos from the Spring Awakening revival. We both got like, do you remember the part of the show where we drew circles around ourselves on the
Yeah.
floor in chalk?
Oh,
So
yeah.
we got like bird's eye views of that. Like mine's a little boy and hers a little girl. And when we stand next to each other, they look at each other.
Oh my
So
gosh, I need to look to see a
if
picture of
you
that.
ever get me and Katherine naked in the same room, we'll do it for you.
The envy of many a young
I'll
queer
try.
man. Oh my God. A bi person's dream right there. Oh my God.
Listen, I'm just saying.
That is by heaven. Oh my
Oh,
Wait.
that's so fun. Okay, Andy, going back to something you said earlier about Instagram,
Yeah.
you've been horny on Main lately, including today. You're posting horny content in the stories, and we thank you for it. We love it.
Well,
We love it.
this is the thing, and I don't know if you've been paying attention, but in the last couple of years, I've become very disinterested in sharing myself, though I've been doing that lately because I've got a show to promote. I've got it,
You have a
suddenly
mustache.
I have a mustache. That's new. But typically what I do, first of all, I only use Instagram on Fridays unless there's like something special going on, just for my own like digital health. And typically what I do, I post actually very rarely when I don't have anything going on, but I do like curate these images from across the platform, and they have kind of a vibe that I can't really, it's just kind of my worldview, which often is quite horny, I do have to admit. But it's like referencing a certain kind of queerness, kind of a past queerness. It's cruising culture, it's bathhouse culture, it's disco, but it's also the 90s. And it's equal parts. I mean, I'm glad you're picking up on the horny stuff, but there's also like a lot of shots of like Meryl Streep doing Taming of the Shrew in Central Park. You know, like there's a lot of like actresses in the 90s smoking on set, you know, like, which is also an important part of my worldview. A more analog New York, a more mysterious New York, a more glamorous industry that was less online. I just try to like, I don't, it makes me happy. And so that's what I use Instagram for. Yeah.
It makes me happy too. I think
Mm-hmm.
we all kind of long for like a pre-online world. Like I even noticed like in Fraternity, your book obviously takes place in the 90s. Like before we are constantly connected on these phones or staring at screens or
Yeah.
just feels nostalgic. It's like right before the world changed forever in such a way that obviously has connected us in great ways, but is all consuming.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, especially narratively, any plot, anything that I'm writing, I just like the way things can be solved so simply with a phone in your hand,
Yeah.
I hate. I
Yeah.
prefer the like, I don't know what to do. I don't know where I am. I don't know the answer to this question, you know. Can't
Yeah.
get a hold of this person. Someone can be lost, you know.
In
Yeah.
your eyes, and so obviously, I want to talk about the Jonathan Larson project. I'm curious because I was around at 54 Below when it was there in 2018. I remember we filmed like a thank you, Jonathan video series
Yeah.
group and everything, but I have yet to see the newly staged version at the Orpheum. Connor got to see it, but
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
curious what year it takes place. Oh.
It's sort of it's then and now, and it takes place. It's hard to even place with this production because it's really like I think of this show as equal parts a great 90 minutes of musical theater starring some really top-notch folks doing some really fascinating material, but also like a gallery show and like an art restoration project
Ooh.
where you, the audience member, from the comfort of your own seat, are kind of walking through the gallery of the newly uncovered archival material of the great artist. And so you're walk each new scene, you're walking up to a new kind of canvas, and it's its own theatrical universe. Like we, to the best of our ability with the scale that we're given, create these little worlds. And so like some, like you might see a cell phone on stage, but some you definitely won't. So it's kind of set all over the place. And there's a bit of a gentle frame and thus narrative to the whole evening, just so that the audience feels like they're experiencing these pieces of theater through the eyes of these distinct characters. But it is more like a, and now this, and now this, and now this. You know, it's a more episodic kind of, yeah, gallery show is how I mean, does that feel as a
It
spectator, what
does.
did you,
It definitely
I'm so
did. I love,
curious. Yeah.
yeah, and because I saw the concert version at 54 Below, and it was obviously in love with it. I mean, the music is just insane, especially the songs you get to sing.
I love my song. Yeah.
Oh my, which,
Yeah.
well, and Andy, you've never sounded better.
Oh, I appreciate that.
So strong. Oh my God. The gag of Out of My Dreams, which that entire scene was giving like Queer as Folk, we're at Babylon, the screens, like,
Yeah.
so good. The blanket. Oh my God. That was one of my favorite moments. But that into Valentine's Day was like this, the 1-2 punch I haven't experienced since, say, Helpless and Dissatisfied from Hamilton. You know what I mean? It's like that.
Wow, you heard it here, folks. Come on down to the Orpheum.
I loved it.
Yeah.
It for sure feels like a gallery show. That's such an interesting way to put it. I haven't heard that yet.
Yeah, because it helps me to like kind of divorce myself from the expectations of like a new musical and like that kind of evening in the theater. We as a cast actually talk about this a lot of like Jonathan's audacious earnestness and like how earnest the music is and his way of delivering a message was and is, and how that feels so of a time and is so different from the way people might put things over now. Like now everything has to be kind of arch and with a wink and a cool kind of way in, an angular way in, and not just like stating baldly like what you're talking about. And he didn't do that. He was very earnest, very frank, and we have to like buy into that to put this across. And you know, some people will be able to get on that ride and some people will not, and that's okay. But like because of the kind of project, for lack of a better term, of the show, of the Jonathan Larson project, of just presenting this material kind of without comment to the best of our ability with the best scale that we have available to us for the interested parties, like that's a kind of a different thing than like us trying to cobble it together into a story that he didn't write, or like, yeah, just make it say something that it isn't designed to say. It really is just like, you know, I'm a big like Joni Mitchell head, and she's been releasing her archival stuff lately, and that's what it is. You go through it and you're like, oh my God, there's a new verse of conversation, or like there's a like listen to this early take of this thing. And it's, you know, so it's like for the nerds in that way, but I also think it's just like good stuff put over well for like people who are a little less initiated, but it's not quite the same as like as trying to put together a new musical as we think of it.
For sure. It is very frank. And the political content in it spoke to me in a different way now than it did in 2018. In fact, I don't remember it being as, and I don't say this in a bad way, but I just say it to say, I don't remember the material being as political as it was. But then I was like, well, wait, Jonathan Rent is political the entire time, you know?
Yeah. First of all, you're not misremembering because there's more of it.
Okay.
We've expanded the program slightly,
Ooh.
and one of the major pieces of that that was added for this production is this section. It's kind of the only like section with dialogue, all of which was written by him. We want to be very clear. We didn't write any of this because there are some things like reference that you'd be like, they changed that, and we absolutely didn't. You
Oh.
can like see the typewritten pages called the Vision Thing, and it was meant to be his Broadway debut in the 80s. I'm Jennifer Tipper screaming somewhere because I can't get the exact facts of this right. I really should know this, but this publication, National Lampoon, which you might know, like National Lampoon's Vacation series, but like they were this humorist magazine in the 70s and 80s. They were going to put together a Broadway show of political sketch comedy in advance of an election. So like the way SNL like becomes really political around election time, they were like, we're going to do this live on Broadway, and they had a theater booked and they hired all these writers, and Jonathan was one of them. So the thing that we're doing in the show was his contribution. We just like picked it up kind of in full. We edited it slightly for time, but not for like, again, no changes, just like kind of picked one part of a larger piece and are doing it for the first time. This thing that was fully supposed to be his Broadway debut and then like fell apart for various reasons. False alarms, they happen in theater. And now we're finally doing the cast before we enter, you know, at places we just by nature of the way the set works, we all have to go to the same room and enter through the same place because it's a small theater and there's only so many ways to do that. There's not like crossovers, but it's great because we all get to like see each other before the show. And we always like kind of talk about where we're at that day and what we need from the show, what we want to bring to it today. And our first like public preview, the thing that I brought to the circle was just like, I was thinking about what that day must have been like when he found out that the project wasn't going to happen and this thing that he had like worked really hard on was just going to go away forever. And if you know his story, like this was the latest in a string, a long string of this shit, and he like still kept going. It's a miracle, actually. And so the fact that we were like finally going to do it, like that was the part I was the most excited about that night, was just like do this weirdo political sketch because he really thought that was going to be the thing. And it like was fully supposed to happen and it just didn't. And now we were like finally completing that work. And that's what like a lot of this feels like. It's like finally completing this work that he began so long ago and like really desperately wanted out there.
Wow, what a gift.
Yeah.
Now, your haircut, your mustache, everything, you're like a new Andy on stage. How much influence did you have in your costuming and look for the show?
Quite a lot. Quite a lot. So I was very grateful to our creative team that they were really collaborative with everyone. I think because they understood like we're doing this collage show, this gallery show, and we need these people that put this stuff forward to be like really distinct and identifiable. And we've hired these distinct and identifiable actors to put over these characters. So let's like involve them and let's just like let that be the narrative that leads us through these, you know, like we piece to piece, it isn't going to quite connect without us putting words in Jonathan's mouth, which we knew we couldn't do, but like we can like be the kind of the current through the whole thing. And so originally we were going in a really different direction with my character because in the 2018 concert of the show and on the album, I am singing the original draft of Valentine's Day, which is in that draft, the singer of the song is singing about a girl who is in this like cycle of abuse. And he's kind of outside of it and trying to like offer her a way out of it. And she doesn't think she's able. And so he's kind of this like outsider looking in on this situation, which to me, there was like a lot of like morality around, like he was kind of moralizing this situation, maybe inappropriately so even. And then my second song, of course, is SOS, where I'm like pleading to the heavens for, you know, something. And so I was like, okay, he's like this mystic. Like we were gonna put me in these like in like suits and like I was gonna be kind of the like Ally Sheedy in the corner with like a weirdo book of like esoteric spiritual, like I'm on this spiritual quest and I'm like maybe kind of a loner because I like loved this girl anyway. And as we were starting to like really embody this stuff, I was like, ah, guys, like I know this is impossible because we can't rewrite Jonathan and he's not here, but like I just so wish I could be singing Valentine's Day about myself. Like in the current construction, the show is really hetero just because he was straight, and so like that's what he's writing about, and I feel like we're missing like a queer component here. And also, it's just like, it's one thing in a concert setting to be singing this song that's just kind of a story song about somebody else. That's fine. It's a great tune. I love singing it. But like to now be in something, I feel like I'm the only one kind of like clicking through a PowerPoint presentation of like someone else's story as opposed to like the end. I was like, I just wish I could be singing about myself. It would solve all these things. And Jen Tepper was like, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. Because she knew that he tried to put that song into Tick Tick Boom, into Rent. He like loved that song and tried to put it into everything and wrote a million drafts of it. And so she found the Rent draft, which was Mimi's version, in which she is singing about herself. And so suddenly we have a first person draft of Valentine's Day. And then, of course, putting that on me, it becomes this queer thing. So now my head is going, I'm like, oh my God, my first solo in the show, I'm singing like, won't someone look, no one wants to meet. Will someone look me in the eye? Look me in the eye. I'm like, oh, he's cruising. And I'm like, oh, he's that in the next song, I say, my mom and pop think I'm a punishment from God. Like, I'm like, oh, it's that he had this religious upbringing and he went to the city. And then we get to Valentine's Day. He's 15 and he goes to this guy's house because he offers him, you know, respite from this storm and falls in this really bad situation. But now this is all he knows. And he's like, and it's this gay. And so I'm into like gay, hard kink. And that is evoking for me, like people I know in my life, people I encounter out in the world. And I saw a very specific outfit, haircut, mustache. It like all kind of clicked into focus. And then when we get to SOS, it like really changes that whole thing. And I'm like, bingo, now we have like, to, in my mind at least, a really complete, complex narrative for this one person, at least through this material. And I got really psyched about kind of making that as clear as possible. And we kept saying that, like, a lot of choices in this production, it would be impossible for the audience to know exactly the like details of, but we hope it's felt like that the specificity is like that you're like, they're doing something. Like, I know they mean it. I don't know what exactly, but like, they're not just at a microphone singing me the song. Like, something's happening in this moment. So, yeah, I was very grateful to the team for like running with me down that direction and being psyched about it and helping me put that all together.
Oh, I love it. And I loved that piece of art that you shared on your Instagram too, by that hot artist performer from Moulin Rouge.
Yes, Pepe, he's amazing. A fellow actor and a truly amazing artist. And yes, quite handsome. So give him a follow.
I'm
He's tagged,
too. Oh,
tagged in my
you know,
profile.
Connor already follows Andy. I mean, like,
Oh,
yeah.
really? Weird.
I
That's so
know. The
weird.
shocks
I didn't
just
know you
keep
were an art fan.
Well, I'm excited to see it because to me, like having seen, I think it was at every single performance, 54 Below in 2018, I know all those songs and the way they were presented was more concert, you know, review style. And it seems like there's traces of through lines and things like that going on.
Yeah,
Yeah.
we're fully staged. I want to be clear to those listening in case they don't know. Like, we are fully staged, all elements, scenic, projection, video, costume. Like, this is a show. We're not, this isn't like our senior showcase. Like, we're doing, and again, like, there is, I think, like, thematic narrative through line. It's not a linear plot, but there, I believe that there's like a journey where you feel like you've ended hopefully somewhere very different than where you've started with this through this material. So we're doing a show for you.
Oh, I'm so glad you're back with it as well. Like, you know, obviously I was so attached to that original crew, but Connor said there's just so many new threads that came about with the new cast, well, some of the new cast members that came in. And is it just you and Lauren from the
Yeah, just me and Lauren from last time. 'Cause yeah, everybody, you know, like, you never know when things finally I mean, I never thought, frankly, we'd be doing this again. Like, it was such a miracle that it happened in the first place in the
Yeah.
concert, and then the recording was such a miracle. And I just, like, every step of the way with this thing, I'm like, I can't believe we get to do this again. But of course, you can't plan for these things. So, like, we did a workshop last summer to just begin to sort of see like what material could be added to augment it and to like what narrative tissue could be created without, again, putting words in Jonathan's mouth, without writing a new plot, without writing new dialogue or anything like that. And the full original group was back to do that. And we had such a ball revisiting that and revisiting each other. But of course, people have lives and other things. Krista's doing Smash Uptown. And so, you know, part of me like mourns that group. But then, first of all, I mean, the people that they got to come in are like some of the best of ever to do it. People that I've like known and loved and admired for years that I finally get to work with. And then it was actually really useful in like, because we have to look at this material in a brand new way to do that, because I was with majority people that had never touched any of this stuff. So I had to look at it a new way, which I feel like brought me to the new Valentine's Day. Like, I wouldn't have thought to even ask for it if I wasn't thinking critically about what we were doing in that way. And I'm just like, oh, this is how this works. This is how we do the show. So it's been very useful to have new hearts and minds on this.
Oh, I love it. Now, do you have your opening night fit picked out?
I do. And I almost went in a really different direction. I found something extraordinary that I thought was just like a little much for the venue and the occasion, but I'm hoping to wear it some other time. But I'm gonna look really cool, and I'm gonna reference, not reference, you know, the character. It's gonna feel in that world for sure.
I can't wait. It's so beautiful. Everybody has to go see it for sure. I loved it. And of course, you're so moved from the very beginning to the very end. There are treats for Rent fans, Jonathan Larson fans, who you're just going to walk from it just feeling deeply, which is my favorite kind of art. So
Good,
I love it. Okay. So, Andy, we've also mentioned a few other things just, you know, from your bio, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, you did Tick Tick Boom a few times since we last spoke with you. Your Larson
Yeah,
connections are just
I
endless.
know.
But I'm super curious to talk to you about your YA novel, Fraternity.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh my God, which we both read.
And I can't
And
remember when maybe last summer, I think it was actually in the fall because it was giving spooky
oh, thank
vibes.
you.
It felt like,
It's perfect for that. It's
well,
perfect for that.
Jen Tepper had read it. And I was like, oh my God, that's right. Andy released this YA novel. And I loved it
Yeah.
so much. I think
I'm so glad.
it's your wheelhouse too, because you were able to get a little risky with it.
Oh, it's
And
horny from
yeah,
yeah, the themes were
just enough.
fantastic. And
Yeah.
I would have loved that.
I mean, I do think as a 31-year-old man, it's amazing and I loved it, but I would have loved it just as much as like a teenager too, to be able to read it and feel
Yeah.
and see a lot of those characters. I was deeply attracted to the one guy, he's like the jock. I'm forgetting his name all of a sudden, right?
Daniel?
Daniel.
Daniel.
Oh my God. I
Daniel.
mean,
Yeah.
wow.
Daniel's dreaming me. Yeah.
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 But it was
We
just a
all love Daniel.
fantastic, fantastic book. And congrats to you. The way that you were able to weave together so many different themes, but it felt so seamless. Get a little witchy. I know you've always had that witchy side, so.
Yeah. Thanks. What can I say? Yeah, it was an encapsulation of like a lot of my worldview. Yeah, I wanted to, there was like just a vibe that I like wanted to capture. But more than anything, I think I was beginning to see where we were starting to go in terms of the backslide of progress, frankly, for queer people in this country and in the world. And I was aware because my previous work for young readers, which was for middle grade, a few years below YA, was Backstagers, which was really a queer, like utopian story where, like, in this world, there is no coming out because everyone is just accepted for who they are. And the stories aren't about queer trauma or anything like that. They're about adventure and friendship. And, you know, I think there was like a lot of queer media for young people like that happening at the time because it seemed like the right thing to do. We had already told the stories of, and it just became clear to me that I felt that a lot of young people were going to really feel the rug pull, where some of us who were a little older were like, of course, things are going to swing forward, they're going to swing back. And because there's always a reaction to, and we've seen this happen across time. But I just kind of wanted to like impart some life lessons that I acquired the hard way, and just to sort of like remind these young readers that like these things that are happening now, the seeds of them were planted in the Reagan era, in the Bush HW era, like that everybody who's shaping this policy, their opinions about queer people were crafted during the crisis. You know, like that even though this seems like a long time ago, it's still happening because the ramifications of it are still like washing up on the shore of history. And so that was kind of the mission of it, but also to make something like fun, spooky, vibey, sexy, like not just a history lesson and like a stark warning, but something that is delivering that in a like entertaining package that I would like want to read. That was the goal.
Do you have a sequel in your brain?
I have thoughts about it. Like I planted a few things in it that could grow from there. I made them sophomores deliberately so that there was like more time to spend with them if that was warranted. But then I, in finishing it, it does feel really complete to me, and I'm proud of that. So I don't know, like maybe someday I will be so inclined, but I am writing another book right now, but it's not at all connected. And it's actually like a totally different genre. There's no magic, no spooky, nothing supernatural. It's like a very everyday kind of plot. So I'll get to that someday, maybe, or maybe not, but I'm
Very
proud of, I think
exciting.
it stands on its own really nicely.
Well, in 4 years when we do another podcast, we'll look back and be like, and you mentioned there were seeds of this.
Can't wait.
Now, Auntie, we jumped into so many different topics, but usually on an episode of Drama, we ask our guests about their Ring of Keys moment when they discovered their love for the arts and wanted to get involved with it. Now, since we last spoke with you, summer 2021, I'm wondering, have you had a Ring of Keys moment that's made you remember why you love the arts in any format that you feel like you want to speak on?
Yeah, to keep it on topic too, like germane to the conversation, it was in 23 and 24 finally getting to do Tick Tick Boom. Doing it in 2023 was my first time on stage since 2019, since pre-pandemic. I did View Upstairs in London in the summer of 2019, and then again was like doing workshops. I like worked on the Out of Town and Maybe Happy Ending on the creative team, but like hadn't done a run of anything, even a small summer stock thing, anything at all, until then. And it was a dream role. It was a bear of a role. Like it is so massive, John and Tick Tick Boom, because it was written as a monologue, of course. So he sings almost every song. He's describing the world and the scenes to you before they would then like snap into being dialogue. I mean, he never stops talking or singing or moving. And yeah, so it was just like this lifelong dream fulfilled, but then it was this
I think I didn't realize how like artistically adrift I had been feeling for the last several years, because there's like this thing happens when you do well in theater. I think it's like Cassie talks about this in A Chorus Line, where like you hit a certain place and then you're not supposed to step backward or even sideways in the eyes of certain people from that place. So thus you're only allowed to like keep doing bigger and bigger and bigger things, which of course then becomes less and less and less and less, because you those opportunities are so few, they're so competitive. And so while like oftentimes the actor would be very happy to take like a small role, an ensemble role, a cover or something, in like you're not allowed to do that. You're told by everyone like, no, you have to stay available, you can't do that kind of thing. And or you have to go do television and film, because it's just more eyes on you, it's flashier stuff, you make a lot more money a lot more easily. And so slowly but surely, the regularity with which I had been on stage was like ticking away, kind of without me noticing it. And I felt busy all the time. I was doing all this stuff, but it was mostly television, which, don't get me wrong, I want to be very clear, I was super grateful for and remain super grateful for and would love to do more of again. Like, I hope I haven't made my last appearance. But at the same time, I didn't grow up wanting to be like a movie star or like be, I don't frankly really have like idols in like film and all the actors or like filmmakers or screenwriters that I admire in that world are from the theater, right? Like, I grew up wanting to be on Broadway. I grew up like obsessed with creatures of the stage and plays and like the great playwrights and the great directors and like that world. And I think I've learned about myself just the process of rehearsal and of like repetition and getting to know a script and a role and a moment like over time slowly, and instead of like the spontaneity of film of like, oh, it gets to be different and we're just gonna like put absolutely everything into this like 2 hours that we're shooting it and then it's gone forever. Like, it's in the can and we did it and we can move on. Some people like really love that. I find that really daunting, actually. I like to like explore and sleep on it and come back in with new ideas. And I talk about this in the last episode of like how much I'm missing the routine and the schedule and like the show's the same, but today it's someone's birthday. And so doing Tick, to like return to like Larson, who was like the whole reason that I got interested in acting in the first place, to be back on stage, to be doing it like I did it with Christina Olivato, who I did my first job with, the Spring Awakening tour. It was just this cosmic return to a lot of things for me that really snapped like my priorities into focus. And I was like, God damn, I really need to be on stage. I need to be prioritizing this. And I need to like kind of do some really hard work to get back on the lists, to like just get back in people's mind about like who to consider for these things. Like, I gotta kind of hit the pavement again, because when you step away and there's like endless amounts of new people to come and take your place. And so I feel very grateful for this opportunity to be back on stage in New York singing Jonathan Larson. Yeah, it's just like it's really what I didn't know I had really been wanting and needing for a really long time now. So that was my new Ring of Keys moment. It was like, oh yeah, theater.
That's so
Theater.
special. Why can't I find the key in the words
Why
of some?
can't I find the key? Yeah.
You
It was
found
where
it.
you,
You found it.
turns out it was right where you left it, idiot. Like, it was right where it always has been, and you just left it behind for a little while. So
Aw, I'm so
yeah.
happy. That really,
Yes.
that's so nice. And you mentioned Christina Olivato, who, of course, Spring Awakening tour. That's when we first became familiar with you 15, 16 years ago.
Yeah.
Was it that long? I think that long.
Okay.
Okay,
Oh
so
yeah. Very
looking
much that
back,
long. Yeah.
that's wild. Considering we were all like children then, anyway. Oh my God.
Yeah. I was 21 when I did that.
21.
And
Okay. Wow.
21. Yeah.
Were you like one of the oldest in the cast too? Like you
I
could
was, yeah.
talk
Well,
to
the tour
anyone?
was a little bit older than Broadway because we were on the road. The youngest was Ben, who was 17 when we started, but somehow he didn't need like a tutor because he was a New Yorker. I don't fully remember, but
He was Harvard bound. He was a genius, so.
he was already years ahead of his time. But yeah, we like they didn't want anyone under 18, so I was one of the older ones. But still, 21 is a baby. Like, I felt so old at the time, and I was a baby.
Well, okay, so looking back on that time, I'm sure you've talked about Spring Awakening for the last, 15 years, but are there any
Yeah.
untold stories, any totally trucked memories, any long lost loves or mishaps or anything you feel like you want to give the guilty ones?
Oh God, what can I say? I mean, Lost loves. I think we were all in love with each other at one point or another across that. Like, there was a lot of
Right.
in-cast dating because, of course, there was, right?
Yeah.
Like, we were kids doing this like sexy play, being treated like rock stars, and only together. Like, tour is just a pressure cooker for that kind of thing. I mean, we would, I think, because we were on tour and we only had each other, we threw really, like, in retrospect, comically lavish birthday parties and gave each other comically lavish birthday presents. And I want to be clear, I sound like Kamala Harris. Let me be clear. We were making pennies, you guys. Like, I, looking back on this, at the time I was like, I can't imagine such fortunes. But as far as theater, even theater salaries go, this was a tiered contract. It was like, because it was a weirdo show. They didn't know, like, if it was going to. And I'm sure there were cities where we actually sold really badly. I only remember it being great, but I'm sure it was a tough sell in, like, you know, certain markets, whatever. But we, at the time, I was like, I'm rich, we're all rich, and we're the Beatles, like, we're rock stars, we're on
Oh,
tour.
yeah.
And so, like, I remember I got like a party bus for everybody, and I took us to this bar where I had like bought out the bar, and we like, and there was a hotel room, and like, I didn't have the money for this, and like, you know, anytime it was like anyone's birthday in the friend group, we'd buy them like an iPod and like electronics, you know what I mean? Like, it was like serious. It wasn't like a card and cookies. It was like we really were acting like we were celebrities. And I look back on that comically because it was really a stupid thing to do. But what else could we do? We were kids, like, we were kids in a candy store. It was really
Oh
silly.
yeah. And amassing like a wildly engaged fan base. And you guys were churning out content. Like Connor mentioned the Totally Truck videos. I remember Perry Sherman had like a video series that he created, and there was blogs.
It was very early internet, right? Like, I mean, I've told the story a million times, so we don't need to like go into it here, but about how I really believe that I was the first social media manager in all of like the theater industry. I really believe
Oh
that.
yeah, I've heard you tell this. Yeah.
When I worked for Spring Awakening before I was in Spring Awakening, and
Oh,
it was like
right.
new, like no one knew how to use this shit. I was catfished for the first time. Because there was some fan or something pretending to be Kevin Adams, our lighting designer, who was like chatting up everybody on like Facebook Messenger and be like, hey, Kevin, like, see you in tech. And then we got like a company email that was like, do not talk to this person. It's not Kevin Adams. And I was like, it was the first time I like had even considered like someone could talk to you and not be who they claim to be. You know, like it was such early social media days. I actually feel really lucky that like I learned a lot of those hard lessons about or like what to post and what not to post, how to keep like your private stuff private.
Yeah.
What take is like maybe a little too spicy for like the general consumption, like what's for your group chat and what's for your notebook and what's for the internet in a kind of like low stakes, like intense fandom and world, but like not quite so global, not like, you know, it was still kind of contained. So I got to like learn some hard lessons about the internet with training wheels on.
Yeah. Oh
Wow.
my gosh.
So fun. We were obsessed with the
Oh
tour.
yeah. Oh
It
yeah.
was
Maybe even
everything.
more
The
than the
tour was
Broadway.
amazing.
When did you meet Krista? Because she was in the Broadway one, right?
Yeah, she was in Broadway. So we met right when I moved to New York to start rehearsals for the tour. Nick Blamire, former Larson Project cast member, schoolmate of mine and dear friend, also a writer,
Yeah.
had written this musical and did like a one day like friends and, you know, like pizza read of it just to like hear it. And I played like the little brother and she played like the girlfriend of the lead. And so we met then and I of course knew who she was. And then I think we saw each other again at like when my cast was rehearsing and the like replacement Broadway cast was going in and like John and Leah and those guys were going, and that was all happening at the same time.
Right.
So they threw this like mixer party for like everybody to kind of like celebrate who was leaving and welcome who was coming and send the tour off on. And so we like saw each other then. But then it was really not till Smash that we got like super close. We like had known each other. She also knew Michael really well because they did the workshop of the Addams Family together when
Oh.
she was in the ensemble and he was Wes's part.
Okay.
Yeah, so like they were friends. So like we'd been circling each other for a long time, but it was during Smash that we really got comfy cozy.
Oh,
Oh my God.
that's so
Love
special.
it.
I love that the two of you have stayed. I mean, you're like siblings at this point.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. She's fam.
Yeah.
Oh my God,
Yeah.
Andy. Well, we're sadly wrapping up this part two episode. Like Dylan said,
Oh,
in 3 4 years, we're
no.
gonna have you back on,
Right.
obviously.
Have part three. Yeah.
Part three. I wonder what it'll
There should be
bring.
a cliffhanger. I wish there was a cliffhanger,
I
but
know. The episode just like cuts out.
Before we say see you later, we want to end with a dose of drama, a little pop culture recommendation, something on our minds, that thing we can't stop thinking about, the drama. I'll start out today because we were just talking about Krista and we were talking about Smash.
And My Dose of Drama is about Smash. I'm so excited to finally see Smash on Broadway. I'm sure people have been talking to you, Andy, about this since the show was on the air. And
Why? What do you mean?
I cannot wait. I especially can't wait to hear, and I'm going to sound like the most basic theater guy on the planet, but that music, Let Me Be Your Star on a Broadway stage, it's going to hit so
Oh,
hard.
yeah.
Oh
Oh,
my
yeah.
God. I can't wait. And I can't wait to see exactly what Krista gets to do in the show, because I think
Right.
she's playing the Deborah Messing role in a way, is my
In
understanding.
a way, yeah, a
Yeah.
sort of echo of it, like, yeah.
Ooh, Echo. I like that take on
An
it.
echo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I cannot wait. Are you going to be at invited dress or opening night or anything? I guess the schedules might be a little.
I can't see the show on opening night, although I think I could see the second act because Larson is, of course, one act and is on the short
It would be
side.
so Kyle Bishop to second act or
Right? To second act
so.
Smash's opening night, but I'm gonna try my damnedest to be at the party at least, and then I'll see like whatever the closest possible preview I can, so that I feel part of the opening weekend. Yeah.
Yeah, you're part of the fabric of it, Andy. So
For
you gotta
sure,
be
for
there. You gotta
sure.
be there. Do you think we'll ever see like a hit list hit the East Village in some way? Like
It's the Jonathan Larson project. It's happening now. It's
it is.
Krista said that when she was like, this is so hit list coded, like the way the set looks and like just the fact that she's doing Smash Uptown and this is happening downtown and she had to kind of like pick and like, like
Oh my God.
it's all very meta. The layers just keep
Oh my gosh,
folding
that's
in.
so funny.
I
I hadn't even thought about
Okay,
that.
My
Yeah.
Dose of Drama is just like a thought, I would say. A lot of Smash alum are working on Broadway, if not only like right now, but this whole Broadway season and in New York in general. Like Jeremy is going to be with Lloyd Collins. Obviously, you're in Jonathan Larson Project. Krista is in Smash.
Megan.
Megan obviously is in Death Becomes Her. The list goes on. Christian was in Tammy Faye. So
Oh my
it's just it
God.
keeps goes on and on.
Wow. Will Kat McPhee Foster return to the New York stage? And I mean, her husband is.
Well, she'll be at Boob Opening Night, yeah, we
Yeah.
know that much.
Wow, wow,
So
wow. I'm
it's all
shaking. Yeah.
connected. Andy, do you have a dose of drama to leave our listeners with? Yeah, I want to recommend a play and a director. It's a little off the beaten path. There's a play called Grangeville going on right now, a play by Sam Hunter, directed by a guy named Jack Serio. I just think it's a great, really beautiful play with a really great and beautiful queer storyline. And if you haven't been seeing Sam Hunter's plays, he wrote The Whale, of course, and A Case for the Existence of God made a big splash maybe last year or the year before. It's just like writing really beautiful plays, really, they're very subtle and very like coming at these themes in unexpected ways, and just like a really skilled playwright, and it's his like the productions are always beautiful. And then this director, Jack, has like built up a reputation for creating like hyper intimate productions in like lofts and like basements and stuff. I saw he directed that production of Uncle Vanya that David Cromer
Right.
was in as an actor with like Will Brill and Marin Ireland and like all these really great actors in a loft, like truly like an audience of 50, I think, all like candlelit. That I was lucky to see, and it was wild. It was so good. And then I saw him direct this David Greenspan play called On Set with Theda Bara that was all at like one long table. Everyone's sitting at this long table, and David Greenspan was just kind of like walking around the table and on the table. And I ran in. I saw him at the opening night party of Oh Mary, which was at the Eagle.
Right, of
If
course.
you know, you know.
Yeah.
And I was just brave enough, let's say, to like accost him. I was like, you are the best. And he's really young. I don't know how young exactly, but younger than me, certainly. I'm so young. No, but
Forever.
he's like this up and comer, but has already like made such a name for himself. And I was like, you're the best. Like, I want to see everything you do. I want to like do stuff with you. And we ended up doing a reading together, and it was like an amazing experience. And so I went to go see this play to see him and to, or to see his play, to see his work. And now he's like hitting bigger stages, and I just think he's like one to watch. So if you want to say, like with Chapel Roan, like I was there then, I saw the early work of this guy, and it's also just a great play with great acting in it. So
Oh,
that's my dose of drama.
that's I
Amazing.
love that so much. I went to see Grangeville earlier this week and
Okay.
loved it. First of all, and this has
Yeah.
nothing to do with the, well, I guess it has to do with the costuming, but Brian Smith's pants, I was obsessed with.
Yeah.
Obsessed. And Paul
He has good
Sparks,
trousers.
he does have good trousers. Paul Sparks's voice is unbelievable. In that space, it just, oh my God, he was incredible casting. They both were, but I agree
When
with everything you
he,
said.
without spoiling anything, that like when he changes roles, I was like, are you kidding me?
I know. It was
Best
so
actor.
good.
Yeah.
I really, really liked it.
Yeah. Go see it, everybody. Go see
Yeah,
it.
it was so good. Thank you for that. And thank you for everything you've given us,
Yes,
Andy. We so
Andy.
appreciate you coming back.
Thank you for having me. And I hope if you're listening out there, you'll come see us at the Orpheum Theater. It's a really rare and special thing, and we're having a ball doing it.
Yes, it's like the Larson, iconography that people will say that they saw it or that, you know what I mean? You don't want to be one of the people who missed it at this point.
I hope so. I hope so. Yeah.
Well, everyone already follows you for when you post your curated, incredible, Instagram stories and posts, but you're just at Andy Mientis on Instagram, right? Are you anywhere
That's
else?
my name. I'm nowhere else. So if you
Right.
see me elsewhere, that's not me. So
Right. We
just
don't
these
want a
big
Kevin
ones.
Adams catfish situation going on here.
Right,
Yeah.
right. Don't send your credit card. I'm not in, Switzerland needing a bailout. Like I'm fine.
While everyone's following Andy, they've got to follow us. We're at the Drama Podcast. Connor's at Connor McDowell. I'm at Dylan McDowell. It was so lovely to reunite with you, Andy. I can't wait to see the Jonathan Larson project.
Thanks, boys. Bye.
And Connor, I will see you next time.
Drama.
Drama.